In this episode, we are going to talk about the new OSHA coronavirus guidelines. Yep, that's right. OSHA published this recently. We're going to go through all of them point by point. Have no fear. I'll break it down for you. You can also go to the OSHA website and read all these for yourself, but you're not going to get the cool commentary we're going to get into here and examples of how you can comply with these requirements. And I'm using requirements in air quotes, and we'll get into that as well on this episode of the Safety Pro Podcast. All right, everybody, before we get into today's topic, I want to remind everybody, if your business is reopening after any kind of closure due to COVID, or you've continued to remain open, but you're struggling with how to mark your facilities to ensure physical distancing and relay important information about safety and health as it relates to COVID, I want you to go visit our friends over at Mighty Line Floor Tape. Mighty Line has some great products for you to mark your floors, whether it be the stand here, the 6 feet distancing, or just floor tape to denote lanes of travel. They have everything you need to mark your facility. So hit the link in the show notes, visit our friends at Mighty Line Floor Tape. They are incredible partners in safety. I can't thank them enough for their support of the podcast. Again, Mighty Line Tape for all of your floor marking needs. All right, as promised, we're going to get into the OSHA COVID-19 guidelines. Now, remember that this guidance, according to OSHA, is intended to inform employers and workers in most workplace settings outside of the healthcare industry. That's very key to remember that, you know, this is supposed to help you identify risks of being exposed to and or contracting COVID-19 at work, and help determine appropriate control measures that you need to implement. They have separate guidance that's applicable to healthcare, CDC guidance, and emergency response settings. So keep that in mind. This is, you know, just for general workplaces outside of those types of settings. They also have additional industry-specific guidance. All right. This guidance contains recommendations as well as descriptions of mandatory safety and health standards. I'll have a link to those in the show notes. So those recommendations are advisory in nature, informational in content, and they're just intended to assist employers in providing a safe and healthful workplace. OSHA goes on to define, you know, what COVID-19 is, gives a little description. They also define face coverings, because if you think about it, it's very important. OSHA needs to define this so that when they reference it later, they know exactly what they're trying to enforce, using air quotes here. According to OSHA, face coverings, either cloth face coverings or surgical masks, are simple barriers to help prevent respiratory droplets from your nose and mouth, the wearer, the person wearing it, from reaching others. So, face coverings protect those around you in case you are infected but don't know it. They also go on to say that it can also reduce your own exposure to infection in certain circumstances. Wearing a face covering is complementary to and not a replacement for physical distancing. So they do make that distinction. They also go on to talk about how employers should be implementing COVID-19 prevention programs in the workplace. The most effective programs engage workers in their unions or their other representatives in the program's development and include the following key elements: conducting a hazard assessment, identifying a combination of measures that limit the spread of COVID-19 in the workplace, adopt measures to ensure that workers who are infected or potentially infected are separated and sent home from the workplace, and implementing protections from retaliation for workers who raise COVID-19-related concerns. All right, so the guidance we're going to go into, it provides additional detail on key measures for limiting the spread of COVID-19, starting with separating and sending home infected or potentially infected people from the workplace. Also, implementing physical distancing, installing barriers where physical distancing can't be maintained, and suppressing the spread by using face coverings. It also provides guidance on the use of PPE when necessary, improving ventilation,
providing supplies for good hygiene, and routine cleaning and disinfection. OSHA will, of course, continue to update this guidance over time to reflect, you know, developments in science, best practices, and other standards that are published or promulgated from other agencies that would be applicable here. And they will also keep track of changes for the sake of transparency. In addition, OSHA expects to continue to update guidance relevant to particular industries or workplace situations over time. As I mentioned, they do carve out some industries and have separate guidance. All right, so at a high level, you know, what workers need to know about COVID-19 protections in the workplace are the following very important points. The best way to protect yourself is to stay far enough away from other people so that you are not breathing in particles produced by an infected person, generally about 6 feet away. And one thing I have learned in conducting incident investigations and reading a bunch of accident reports and going out and verifying information is, in the workplace and in life in general, I imagine, people are very poor at judging two main things, time and distance. So you don't know what 6 feet looks like. It's about two arm lengths. Also, something to keep in mind, you know, this is not a guarantee, right? Especially in enclosed spaces or those with poor ventilation. Practice good personal hygiene and wash your hands often. Always cover your mouth and nose with a tissue when you cough or sneeze, or use the inside of your elbow, and do not spit. You know, that's a big one. Monitor your health daily and be alert for COVID-19 symptoms, you know, the fever, cough, shortness of breath, and other symptoms of COVID-19 as listed at the CDC website. Face coverings are simple barriers to help prevent your respiratory droplets or aerosols from reaching others. It is not a guarantee. It helps prevent them. And this is the thing I see online and, you know, whether it's Facebook or even LinkedIn, but, you know, folks, they have this sort of binary way of looking at all of this stuff. The myth is, if it's not 100% effective, then it's no good at all. I mean, think about it. How many times have you all heard, and I know if you're a safety pro, you've heard it at least once, and if you haven't, you're about to, from somebody. Let's say, I'm just going to pick safety shoes, safety toe, steel toe shoes. How many times have you heard the old myth or the excuse, well, if an I-beam falls on my safety toe, that's going to, you know, amputate my toes. So therefore, it's pointless. Really? I mean, come on. Let's be grown-ups here. That's not what it was designed to do. So too are face coverings. They have limitations, right? But they're very effective on some levels. Not all face coverings are the same, and the CDC recommends that face coverings be at least two layers of a tightly woven, breathable fabric, such as cotton, and should not have exhalation valves or vents. Man, I got into it online with a post. Man, this is a while ago. I mean, it was a long time ago at this point in COVID, you know, years. But I said that, yeah, if your face mask has an exhalation valve, you're defeating the entire purpose. And respiratory protection experts wanted to argue with me about how it makes exhaling easier and it's easier on the wearer. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but only when it's designed to protect the wearer from the outside air, not protect the outside air from the wearer. Nobody could seem to grasp this basic point. So look, be the professional. Right? Be the one that gets this, that understands, oh, we've changed, comprehensively changed and flipped 180 degrees the reason why we're wearing this thing on our face. It's to catch my stuff, not to catch outside stuff. Therefore, you would reverse the thinking on these things. So, a long way to get to this, but be on the lookout for exhalation valves. Those are no good for this type of application. Also, the main function of wearing a face covering, as we know, is to protect those around you. So it's actually got to cover the, you know, most important parts of your face, the nose and the mouth. And you know, as mentioned, it's not their primary value, but studies also show that they have an ability to reduce the wearer's risk of infection in certain circumstances and depending on the face covering that you're wearing. So keep that in mind. You should wear a face covering even if you do not feel sick. This is because people with COVID who have never developed symptoms are asymptomatic, and those who are not yet showing symptoms, they're pre-symptomatic, can still spread the virus to other people. And it is especially important to wear a face covering when you're unable to stay at least 6 feet apart from others, since COVID-19 spreads mainly among people who are in close contact with one another. And, you know, wearing a face covering doesn't eliminate the need for physical distancing or other measures like hygiene and things. It doesn't. But it does reduce the chance if one of those other, you know, layers of protection fails. And this is what, as safety pros, we should get this. Oh, wow, we're talking about a layered approach, right? We're talking about building redundancy. And yeah, exactly. You know, you've heard the Swiss cheese model. You've heard all this stuff as safety pros, right? You know, safety isn't the absence of incidents. It's the presence of defenses. These are all defenses that are needed. You don't pick one. You have to have all of them. And as you start taking one away, that's one layer of Swiss cheese you're missing. The opportunity for something to get through increases, however great or small, it does increase. So that's what we need to be considering when we go through all of these guidelines. It's important to wear a face covering and remain physically distanced from coworkers and even customers, even if you have been vaccinated, because it is not known at this time how vaccination affects transmissibility. The thing here is, I know people who have gotten one of the boosters, one of the two shots, and after their first shot, they're out at the grocery store wanting to hug their neighbors they see. And I'm like, you're not even 50%, you know, effective. And if it's been just a day or two after your first shot, it's not even a quarter, you know. And then that only prevents you from getting the symptoms, right? It prevents you from getting sick from COVID. You still have the virus, so you're still able to spread it to other people. So if you are in the middle of your workers getting vaccinated, make sure that they still understand the limitations of the vaccination until everybody around them has also been vaccinated. Many employers have established COVID-19 prevention programs that include a number of important steps to keep workers safe, including steps from telework to flexible schedules, or PPE and face coverings. So make sure that you look at your plans in your workplace, make sure you've got this shotgun approach, that you're able to accommodate a variety of people in a variety of different ways. Now, how does OSHA do all of this, right, with this guidelines? Well, under the OSHA Act, employers are responsible for providing a safe and healthy workplace free from recognized hazards that are likely to cause death or serious physical harm. We know what that is. That's the general duty clause. And so they're saying, implementing a workplace COVID-19 prevention program is the most effective way to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 at work. So, that's how they're going to link these two together. The most effective COVID-19 prevention programs engage workers and their representatives in the program's development and implementation at every step, and they include the following elements. So, we're going to break all these down. We're going to get into all of these. What are there? 16. 16 different elements to this program. 1, the assignment of a workplace coordinator who will be responsible for COVID-19 issues on the employer's behalf. This is specific to COVID-19. Now, some of you might be thinking, you know what? It's going to be the safety person because they know this stuff. Well, if you have a certain level of authority in the organization, you're a high-level senior ops level safety manager, this may work. Personally, my recommendation, get somebody from senior operations leadership to take this on, because it's going to do a couple of things. One, everybody expects the safety person to wave the safety banner and march around with this stuff, okay? But what it's going to do is send a very clear message when you have a very proactive, forward-thinking senior ops leader saying, this is what we're going to do, and the buck stops with me. They're going to be responsible for all COVID-19 issues on the employer's behalf. That means they're probably going to be engaging in with the local health department if somebody calls to complain, or OSHA if they send a letter or a call related to COVID-19 issues. That's going to send a very clear message to OSHA that senior ops leaders don't pass the phone off to the safety manager, that they're fielding that call and we safety professionals support them. That senior ops leader has a staff, a team of subject matter experts from benefits and HR and safety, maybe engineering and maintenance, that person can rally around a common cause. So that's my recommendation for this first one, assignment of a workplace coordinator. Number two, identification of where and how workers might be exposed to COVID-19 at work. Now, this includes a thorough hazard assessment to identify potential workplace hazards related to COVID-19. You know, look, the assessment would be most effective if it involves workers or their representatives, because they're often the people most familiar with the conditions they face. So if you have a safety committee, if you already have a well-engaged workforce that are used to doing job safety reviews, hazard assessments with you, this is no different, but you're going to need to educate them on how COVID-19 is transmitted, the hygiene that's required, the ventilation issues and things of that nature, so that they can adequately, and effectively assess work for those types of hazards. But get them involved. Number three, the identification of a combination of measures that will limit the spread of COVID-19 in the workplace in line with the principles of the hierarchy of controls. This should include a combination of eliminating the hazard, engineering controls, administrative policies, PPE, and, other types of measures. And of course, prioritizing controls from the most to least effective, right? To protect workers from COVID-19, you're going to have to first start with how can we eliminate or engineer out issues and then go from there. So eliminating a hazard, separating and sending home infected or potentially infected people from the workplace, some ones that can complain that they might not, be feeling well or something like that. Just get them out of there. Just remove them altogether. Implementing physical distancing in all communal work areas and coming to and from their workstations, staggering start and stop times and staggering breaks to ease congestion in hallways and break rooms and around the microwaves and all that stuff. Those are a great way of implementing some physical distancing controls. You can install barriers where physical distancing can't be maintained, so some engineering controls, right? You can suppress the spread of the hazard using face coverings and requiring them 100% of the time while in the workplace. You can improve ventilation, use applicable PPE to protect workers from exposure, provide the supplies necessary for good hygiene practices, putting sanitizers and sprays in disposable paper towels and gloves at workstations so they can wipe things down and clean as they go. And then, of course, make sure you work with housekeeping or contract with housekeeping to perform routine cleaning and disinfection. This is going to be key. Workers are going to see all these efforts, and that's going to boost your credibility, and of course, confidence in the employer. Number four, consideration of protections for workers at higher risk for severe illness through supportive policies and practices. So look, older adults, and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions, they're at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. Workers with disabilities may be legally entitled to reasonable accommodations that protect them from the risk of contracting COVID-19. So work with your HR department and your accommodations team where feasible. You should also consider reasonable modifications for workers that are identified as high risk who can do some or all of their work maybe at home or remotely. Set up a different work area for them that makes them feel included but is maybe away from, the main cube farm that you normally have for them. Put them in less densely occupied areas, better ventilated areas, things like that. Those are all great ideas to consider. Number five, establish a system for communicating effectively with workers and in a language that they understand. So anytime something happens in the workplace, you don't need to, provide the name, rank, and serial number of everybody who tested or called in and said, I tested positive. You have to do your contact tracing, and we'll get to all that. you know, being able to communicate effectively, not just the hazards of COVID-19, which you should be doing in general, high level, and then narrow down to specific jobs, tasks, and roles that people have in the organization, and catering the messaging to what they're facing and what they have to deal with, you know, that's something we should be doing anyway. And of course, the 12th one I'm going to talk about kind of circles back around to this about retaliation. But, you know, look, you've got to make sure that we build confidence in our communication system and our leadership, you know, chain here in the organization, that employees understand that communication isn't one way. We're not communicating at people. Communication is a two-way street, up and down, top to bottom, okay? And certainly, you know, left to right across an organization. So as workers report issues to the employer, we want to make sure that we circle back and communicate how we've been dealing with that situation or issue, you know, what we're doing about it, and then maybe get them involved. Also, a best practice, create and test two-way communication systems that workers can use to self-report if they are sick or have been exposed, and that employers can use, you know, what they can use to notify workers of exposures and closures. There's text services you can use, there's apps, there's like proprietary apps you can pay for and buy. I know a lot of medium and small businesses may not be able to afford a whole lot, but you know, I posted recently on the Safety Pro community site about using Slack, even the free version that they have, using Slack where you can control who can, you know, who has access to that by inviting them, you know, workers that you have. That prevents anybody from knowing anybody else's cell phone number, so it keeps it off of text. And it's an app that you can use to communicate, and you create different channels for different purposes. But, you know, as somebody leaves the organization, you can like just remove them from the list. They will no longer have access to any of that info. It's a great tool. So go ahead and check out that post on the Safety Pro community site. But those are some, you know, unique things and some creative, very low cost or no cost things medium and small businesses can do to say, hey, we're effectively communicating. We have a way to immediately notify everybody if we have a closure or an issue in a specific work area or building, COVID related, that they need to know about before they get here. So that's just one way you can do it. Number 6, educate and train workers on your COVID-19 policies and procedures using accessible formats. And of course, we're real big on this, and in a language they understand. Communicate supportive workplace policies clearly, frequently, and in plain language. This includes non-English languages, you know, American Sign Language, or other accessible communication methods, if that applies to you in your workplace. And then, of course, in a manner that's accessible to individuals with disabilities, right? Multiple methods to employees, contractors, and many other individuals on site, as appropriate, to promote a safe and healthy workplace. Communications should include basic facts about COVID-19, including how it's spread, the importance of physical distancing, use of face coverings, hygiene, those rules that you have set up. These are permission to work rules, right? When you come to work, you have to be doing these things. It's not a question. It's not a, you know, a recommendation. It isn't an option. It's mandatory, okay, that you do these things. And that gets us to workplace policies and procedures that you've implemented. You got to communicate those. And of course, some means of tracking which workers have been informed and when. So you want to make sure that you can show that you have effectively communicated all of these things. So ensure that workers understand their rights to a safe and healthful work environment in general, but certainly with COVID as well, and whom to contact with questions or concerns about the workplace safety and health issues that they may be experiencing, and their right to raise safety and health concerns free of retaliation. Build that trust and that confidence that those workers will have in management and leadership. This information should also be provided in a language that workers understand as well, right? And make sure supervisors are familiar with workplace flexibilities and other, you know, human resources policies and procedures that will help them facilitate this. Number 7, instruct workers who are infected or potentially infected to stay home and isolate or quarantine to prevent or reduce the risk of transmission of COVID-19. Number 8, minimize the negative impact of quarantine and isolation on workers. Now, whenever possible, allow them to telework, work from home, you know, or work in an isolated area from others, which that may be, you know, not be as realistic. But look, if those aren't possible, allow workers to use paid sick leave if you don't have any, and then maybe credit it back at, you know, later on afterwards. You know, consider implementing paid leave policies that will reduce risk for everyone at the workplace. Make sure folks aren't afraid that, you know, I have to come to work and I'll take my chances with doubling up on the mask and staying away from people. I just won't say anything, okay? Because I'm afraid to take any time off or I don't have that much time left. Minimize the negative impact. Something else. A little tip for you. The Families First Coronavirus Response Act provides certain employers 100% reimbursement through tax credits to provide employees with paid sick leave or expanded family and medical leave for specified reasons related to COVID-19 through March 31st, 2021. So be sure to hit the link in the show notes and look for that Families First Coronavirus Response Act. Research that a little bit. Number 9, isolating workers who show symptoms at work. Workers who appear to have symptoms upon arrival at work, so maybe you're taking temperatures and you have thermal cameras and you're screening people, or maybe they develop symptoms during their work shift, they should immediately be separated from other workers, customers, and visitors and sent home and encouraged to seek medical attention. So going back to the previous 2 points, make sure that you instruct workers who are infected or potentially infected to stay home and isolate, but also minimize the negative impact of those actions as well, those things they have to do. That all leads to that number 9 is you have to have a way to isolate workers who show symptoms at work. Number 10, performing enhanced cleaning and disinfection after people with suspected or confirmed COVID-19 have been in the facility. So if someone has been in the facility and is suspected or confirmed to have COVID-19, you follow the CDC cleaning and disinfection recommendations. This includes closing areas that were used by the potentially infected person for enhanced cleaning, opening outside doors and windows to increase air circulation in that area, waiting as long as practical before cleaning, disinfection. 24 hours is optimal because you don't want to expose the cleaning folks, right? Cleaning and disinfecting all immediate work areas and equipment used by the potentially infected person, such as offices, bathrooms, shared tools and workplace items, tables or work surfaces and shared electronic equipment, tablets, touchscreens, keyboards, phones, you know, things like that. Vacuuming the space if needed. Use a vacuum equipped with a HEPA filter and wait until the room or space is unoccupied to vacuum because you're also going to blow and kick stuff around. But, you know, vacuuming is one that's often overlooked. Provide, you know, cleaning workers with disposable gloves, additional PPE like goggles, glasses, aprons, you know, things that might be required based on the cleaning and disinfectant products being used and whether there's a risk of splashing and overspray, things like that. So make sure whoever's doing the cleaning, they're equipped properly as well. After cleaning, disinfecting the surface with appropriate EPA registered disinfectant. And there's a difference between cleaning and disinfecting. Cleaning is simply removing dirt and debris, which may also remove germs, but not kill them. Disinfecting will actually is the process of killing infectious agents, right? There's a difference. So make sure any disinfectant that you're using is EPA registered for SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19. Once the area has been appropriately disinfected, it can be reopened for use. Workers without close contact with the potentially infected person can return to the area after disinfection. If it's been, you know, more than 7 days since the infected person visited or used the facility, additional cleaning and disinfection is not necessary. So continue routine cleaning and disinfection in those cases. So make sure you have a way of communicating that an area has been shut down and when the area is available for use again. You've got to cordon that off and use great good signage and then post people there. If it's a busy workplace, you really want to prevent people from going into that area. Number 11, providing guidance on screening and testing. Follow any state or local guidance on this and, you know, priorities for screening and viral testing in workplaces if you do that. but testing in the workplace may be arranged through the company's occupational health provider or in consultation with the local or state health department. Certain employers are eligible for this. Employers should inform workers of employer testing requirements, if any, and availability of testing options. The CDC has published strategies for consideration in incorporating, you know, viral testing for COVID-19. So make sure you hit the link in the show notes to look at some of the strategies that they have published. So, A, it's important to understand this one here. Performing screening or health checks is not a replacement for other protective measures like face coverings, physical distancing, you know, things like that. Just because you say we've screened people when they come in, thermal cameras and temperatures, you still have to do all this other stuff, right? Asymptomatic individuals or those with mild, non-specific symptoms, they may not realize they're infected and they're still milling around your workplace. So temperature screenings only catch people who are actively displaying symptoms, okay? It is not a fail. Remember, Swiss cheese. This is another layer of protection. Number 12, recording and reporting COVID-19 infections and deaths. Employers are responsible for recording work-related cases of COVID-19 illnesses on their Form 300 log, and that is if the case is a confirmed case of COVID-19 and the case is work-related as defined by 29 CFR 1904.5 and the case involves one or more relevant recording criteria set forth in 29 CFR 1904.7. For example, medical treatment, days away, things like that. You must follow the requirements in 1904, 29 CFR 1904, when reporting COVID-19 fatalities and hospitalizations to OSHA. So I'm going to have a link to OSHA's website that you want to follow to get more information on this. It's a real simple test for whether or not it's work-related. And really, if it's more likely than not, you have other cases in that work area, on that shift, with other workers. You know, there's a real quick and easy way for you to determine, okay, is this work related or not? You can also use a simple questionnaire that, you know, for contact tracing, the CDC recommends, where you ask the individual, you know, have they been in contact with anybody known to be infected with COVID-19? Have they traveled? And, you know, there's questions you can ask where you can go, okay, it's more likely than not they got this outside of work. They went to the bar the other night with a bunch of friends. One of their other friends just had it a week ago, but said they felt fine. But at work, they follow all the protocols. They're not near anybody. Nobody was within 6 feet of this person in the last 48 hours. And maybe you use video cameras to tell or you interview other employees. But, you know, it's really, I don't want to say it's the honor system, but like I said, it's more likely than not either work-related or not work-related. You just have to come by it honestly. Document, document, document. That's how you're going to, you know, be able to prove diligence that you've done. Number 13, implementing protections from retaliation and setting up an anonymous process for workers to voice concerns about COVID-19 related hazards. So make sure that you are able to demonstrate to regulators that you have a sort of an anonymous way and a, you know, a non-punitive way of reporting things. Now, if you already have this set up for employees to report safety concerns and safety hazards, use that, okay? Number 14, this is a new one, and people are going to scratch their head on this one, but think about it. Making a COVID-19 vaccine or vaccination series available at no cost to all eligible employees. So just provide information and training on the benefits and the safety of vaccines, but make sure that you provide them the information that they need to be able to qualify for vaccines and get them at no cost. You know, I can only speak to my health insurance provider. You would have to check with yours, but in the workplace, if you provide healthcare coverage, healthcare insurance coverage, then check with them on what's covered and not and make that information available. Make it super easy for employees to get that information. We're in the home stretch, two more left, right? Number 15, not distinguishing between workers who are vaccinated and those who are not. Remember, vaccinations, that's not a foolproof, you know, way to go. You've got other people in the workplace that aren't vaccinated yet. You have somebody who only had one booster, haven't had the second booster, so they're not 100% effective. Plus, the vaccines, as far as we know today, they only prevent you from developing the symptoms of COVID-19, getting sick from it, which is that's what's killing people. That's what's putting people in the hospital, are the symptoms from COVID-19. You could still carry the virus around and give it to other people. You're just not going to get sick from it because you've been vaccinated. So you can't distinguish between those who have been vaccinated and those who haven't, letting those who have been vaccinated get the preferred shifts, playing favorites. Don't get into that. Some sort of ops manager or supervisor starts even hinting around asking about this. Shut it down. You don't want that hassle in the workplace. Don't even go there. Workers who are vaccinated have to continue to follow protective measures like wearing face coverings and remaining physically distanced. You know, that's hands down. Everybody should look the same in the workplace when it comes to COVID-19 protocols, regardless of whether they've had the vaccine or not. And number 16, other applicable OSHA standards. So OSHA throws this at the end, the very end. They make you go all the way to the end at number 16. All of OSHA's standards that apply to protecting workers from infection remain in place. These standards include respiratory protection, PPE, sanitation, protection from bloodborne pathogens, and of course the general duty clause. But look, this is over top of all of those other standards that you have to follow. No, those don't go away. That's the other dirty little secret. I know I've learned this, I've seen this, and I've talked to colleagues, and we've mulled over this as well. What COVID-19 has done, it's really reminded us of how resiliency plays a huge role in how organizations deal with adversity. Having the right leadership, cultivating the right culture, will help us get through adverse times. That's key. We all know that. And this has shown that. This proves it out. Okay? Those that are struggling, they struggled before with safety. They probably just didn't see it at this scale. The other thing that COVID-19 has done is it also, at the same time, can mask sort of this safety, the standard safety work that we all have to get back to the basics. We all still have people in the workplace, you know, with processes and materials and equipment and tools and, you know, interfacing with the public. We still have those everyday hazards and issues that we should also still be dealing with. COVID has sort of blinded us to that, has taken over. It's sucked all the air out of the room, and that's all we seem to be thinking about right now is COVID-19. Well, we still have that worker that is making our parts, you know, processing materials, out on the job site, interfacing with the public. So don't discount, you know, your standard work just because of COVID. COVID overlays all this stuff. What have you done? What are some best practices that you've done related to COVID-19 protocols that you're really, really proud of? I want you to go over to the Safety Pro Podcast community page. I want you to hit the link in the show notes. Go ahead and sign up. It's a no cost to sign up and become a free member. You'll get to be able to see all of the, you know, public posts that we make there. But if you want to interact with, you know, the replies and read all the comments and replies and engage with the live chats and watch the training videos and download some of the templates and the freebies that we have, think about becoming a premium member. Head on over there and drop me your comments. What best practices are you most proud of? And share some of that with other safety pros so that we can continue to protect our workers. I look forward to reading your replies, and I'll talk to you on the next Safety Pro Podcast episode.